All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back with you a while longer here on the side on Planet Radio. No. On johnlightning.com. Yes, yes, yes. Planet Radio history for this week, but still with you for a while longer. Gentlemen, anything you'd like to add to the proceedings now that we're free from the minimal restraints that we incur on Planet Radio? What the hell? What is this here on? I don't even have an audio feed. It looks like one of those real sex things going on in HBO here.
They have a show called Cat House.
Something like that? I've heard. Believe it or not, I've never seen it.
Really?
Yeah. Really?
I'm shocked.
I mean, there's so much, you know, with Real Sex 1, Real Sex 2009. But that's what I want. Not to watch fucking, you know, not to watch a bunch of sluts, pigs, and harlots on HBO, but to have some real sex. Then you can keep this shit. Of course, I realize, you know, in the case of most of us, particularly those of us that do radio, there's very little chance that we're going to have real sex that we're not paying for one way or the other. So, anything, gentlemen? Speak now or forever hold your...
No, Saturday, May 12th, I may not go on the air. I'll watch this instead. Wait a minute, I don't have HBO. I'll be over here.
What's that about? Why? What is May 12th?
That's when the show starts.
Oh, okay. Well, why? Is The Sopranos over by then? I don't know.
I guess I
haven't seen it. I'll watch it tomorrow. I guess the only big news story of merit that we didn't cover this week was the fact that astronomers discovered a planet outside our solar system that is potentially habitable. A planet that is 120 trillion light years away. And all kinds of people got excited about that, to which I got to say, what's the big fucking simmers here? Why would anybody get excited about a planet 120 trillion miles away? Even if we were advanced enough to travel at the speed of light, which is like kind of fast, it would take us how many thousands of years to get there? How do you do that? Unless you can put people in suspended animation, how do you do that? Unless you have them breeding and procreating on the way, dying off and replacing each other, all along the way, retraining each other, how do you stock enough food for a trip that takes thousands? How do you stock enough fuel? You would need a fuel tank the size of fucking Saturn just to get there. How do you then get back? And if you do then get back thousands of years later, will there be a mankind to even come back to? In other words, what I'm trying to say is the whole idea, it's ludicrous that anybody could get excited about this, because unless that other civilization, first of all, you know, the planet is considered Earth-like, all right? The conditions are good for life to be supported there as we know it. Who's to say life has begun to form there as we know it? And who's to say if life had formed there, who's to say that life might already have been extinguished there? Maybe they did away with themselves or they died out. We don't know that there's anything there. And the only way we are going to ever hook up with them is if there is existing life there and it's so advanced that they can get to us in relatively good time, because we sure as hell can't get to them. And let's face it, if they've been watching over us, if they've been intercepting our radio and television signals, getting the Springer show and Jenny Jones, I mean, they've already decided, well, fuck that Earth shit.
just realize, they just said that this is because the planet probably has water and oxygen in the atmosphere.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean the temperatures are hospitable.
Volcanoes. They found the temperatures were hospitable. That the temperature there that they have estimated averages somewhere between 32 and 104 degrees. And that's what got the astronomers going, da 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 da. Because they figured, wow, this is it. Finally, an Earth-like planet. Like, well, what does that mean? We're going to leave tomorrow? Like we got a backup? We got a spare Earth now? Yeah, well, what does it mean? I can't get excited over something
you're
120 trillion miles away. What?
You're an idiot.
Why?
I'll bet you if you read all of those articles, there's not even a single mention of what's going there. Or anything even close to that.
Yeah, but what good does it do to know that other life might exist if we can't interact somehow or communicate?
Well, these astronomers and the scientific community have been trying to prove the possibility of life somewhere else for God knows how long, and anything that even hints that it's possible is proof, and which means that they'll be doing more continued searches, and maybe they'll find something closer.
Yeah. It just means that...
Something closer means that we'd be able to get there in a couple thousand years less?
And what? Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Something closer would still not be something that we might be able to reach within the lifetime of mankind.
Who knows?
Yeah, but, right. it's the idea that we're saying there have to be other planets that can support life.
No, there doesn't have to be. It's possible. I would like to think, considering the vastness of space, that it's maybe likely.
Yeah, very likely. And here we are. We found a planet that can support life as we know it.
Right. And therein lies the key, as we know it.
That's right.
How many other planets might there be out there with life unlike the life we know that might be indeed, and I don't mean like lower life form, you know, amoeba-ish type shit, but I mean a life form out there far more advanced than us, because I have always tended to be of the possible belief that that which we consider to be God might actually be more advanced beings from other planets that may indeed have been responsible for seeding us to this planet.
Yeah, well, there's always the belief that those fiery chariots of the gods were really spaceships from another race.
Yes, indeed.
Or even us from the future who got locked back into a time warp into our prehistoric period.
Oh, yes, I know. And black holes, and we'll be able to get there tomorrow. I don't know.
Wormholes.
Bottom line, wormholes, whatever they are. Nonetheless, it's deemed possible for life to exist on this planet, which is relatively similar to Earth's size and temperature. Therefore, you know, liquid water, as if there's another kind. I read an article that said, the temperature there would permit liquid water. even ice was at one time liquid water.
Water, liquid state. Water is ice in a solid state. Water is steam in a vapor state.
Right.
Also, but you got to realize in certain atmospheric conditions, water can be in the air but not be steam.
That is true. Okay. That is true. By the way, the planet is circling the red dwarf star Chiseli 581. I think that's how you pronounce it. I'm pretty sure I got an IM from Chiseli 181 when I was in the Girls with Curls chat room.
No,
they all sound the same to me. By the way, red dwarfs are low-energy, tiny stars that give off dim red light and last longer than stars like our sun. And until a few years ago, astronomers didn't consider these stars as possible hosts of planets that might stay alive, but now we know better.
Those Michael cigarette smoke.
Could be. You know, when I come back here, like the next morning, I come down here to the studio, you know, close up shop. I could smell.
Yeah.
Even a couple seconds, I can smell it in the air. I hate it.
I can smell it in my clothes when I get home.
By the way, the new planet star system is a mere 20.5 light years. Forget the 122. 20.5 light years away. It's, you know, we're never going to know. So, I don't know. Scientists get all excited about that. I look at it from the standpoint like, big fucking deal. Sorry.
Well, who cares, buddy?
And they've also estimated that gravity is 1.6 times as strong as Earth's. So a 145 or thereabouts pound person like me would weigh over 240 pounds there. I'll be fucked if I would ever go there under any circumstance. Find that wormhole tomorrow. No, thank you. I'm staying at my fighting weight.
You're talking about the mass. Therefore, it's probably about, we're 25,000 miles. So that's about maybe 38,000 miles.
I don't know about just it would be
about 30, man.
8,000. Yeah. All right. We got to get out of here in the way in which I stated we would tonight, which is by playing for you in its entirety, and it was a pretty long segment because the Hannity and Combs show devoted better than half of their show to their interview with Bernard McGuirk, who got the axe. He was the producer for 20 years of the Imus in the Morning show. And I want to play for you at this time the interview that Alan Combs and Sean Hannity, mainly Sean Hannity as usual. Yeah, like Alan Combs never gets equal fucking airtime. It was pretty decent. And Bernard made his points relatively well. You could be the judge because we're going to close out the show by playing out for you right now. Thanks again for listening. Good night, you all.
Welcome to Hannity and Combs. I'm Alan Combs, and we get right to our top story tonight. The controversy that led to the dismissal of Don Imus began with this exchange on his radio show with his producer, Bernard McCurk.
How's some rough girls from Rutgers, man. They got tattoos and some hardcore hoes. That's a nappy-headed hoes there. I'm going to tell you that now. Oh, man, that's some move. And the girls from Tennessee, they all look cute, you know. So, like, kind of like a, I don't know.
Spike Lee thing.
Yeah.
Jingaboos versus the Wannabes.
Yeah.
That movie that he had.
Yeah.
Limus's former producer and the man heard on that tape, Bernard McCurk, joins us now for his first exclusive interview since the controversy began. Bernie, very good to see you again.
We've Alan,
I and Imus worked together at WNBC.
We certainly did. A number of years ago. Absolutely. And I want to apologize, Alan, for, you know, characterizing you as we do on the program, insult people, characterizing you as looking like a ferret in a suit.
No, it's a badge of honor, honestly.
I want to apologize.
To be mentioned on Imus' show is a badge of honor.
And look, by the way, I apologize also for not wearing a tie tonight. I mean, if John McCain can announce for president in a sweater.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you came with material. That's great. I mean, all right, so what happened?
Well, you heard what happened. I mean, we were...
From your vantage point, what happened?
Well, first of all, I want to just say that I'm here to represent myself. I do not in any way speak for Mr. Imus, who, by the way, conducted himself with dignity and class.
Yeah.
One of the few people, along with the Rutgers basketball team, the women there.
Who, by the way, forgave him, in spite of the fact that his corporate masters did not. But
his corporate masters and some of the other, you know, the terrorists out there, you know, the mob.
Well, we'll get into that, but I'd love to know from your perspective how this all came down.
Well, I mean, we were just we were having a discussion on the air, as you heard. I mean, the context is comedy. It's not a serious sports discussion show, nor is it a meet the press. You know, it's all fun. I mean, that's what we do. We dwell in sort of locker room humor. That's what we did anyway.
You've been doing it for 35 years.
Doing it for 35 years. And nobody took the brunt of some of the savage humor more than Mr. Imus himself. And so as I was the bald-headed stooge and he was, you know, pardon my language, a scrotum-faced old dope or whatever it was. And that's just the kind, you know, in that realm that we dwelt, you know, we would do politics and all of that. But that was one element of the program. So this conversation came up, as you saw, and you just played the tape.
At the moment that happened, now some said, well, you actually said the word ho.
That's right. I did say the word ho. And it's not a word that people in radio and in the pop culture do not use.
Right.
You know, it derives from the hip-hop community, and we appropriated it. You know, I'm trying to be cool. By the way, I came from the streets myself. I grew up in the South Bronx in a housing project.
Yeah.
I drove a taxi at night in the ghettos and Yonkers and the Bronx. And that was my language. My language is the street language. So yeah. I'm not some, you know, rich white kid from the suburbs trying to sound. You know, that's what I did. I spoke that way. I could, you know, I could roll this way, that way, whatever.
At the moment that happened, the moment that those few words got said, was there any sense, oh, no, this was a mistake? Or was it only later that this kind of mushroomed and became something other than what it was at the moment that it took place?
Well, I think it took off. Mr. Imus apologized, and but then, of course, Al Sharpton got involved. You know, he picked up he dusted off his bullhorn. And,
but when I'm trying to get at the moment that took place, though, was there any sense we've gone too far, or was that not a thought at that moment?
At that particular moment, no, not at that particular moment. That wasn't because again, we engage in this type of humor all the time. I mean, you know, we have people like, say, these renowned authors, Mary and Carol Higgins Clark. They would come on the program, and we would refer to them as the Higgins Clark hoes, you know, for fun. They'd come on, they'd laugh about it. So the use of that word, and it's so prevalent in today's society, and it doesn't mean, you know, a woman who is, you know, promiscuous. It's just a pejorative slang term for a woman, unfortunately. I didn't get the memo that it was elevated to the status or lowered to the status of the N-word.
Bernie,
I hadn't gotten the memo thus far.
Well, welcome to the show. Go ahead. Thanks
Thank
for coming.
Sure.
Appreciate you being here. He apologized. That, in light of all that's happened, you know, what do you think about what you said in this thing? You've been fired.
I'm here just to speak for me, and I think obviously it was wrong. I mean, I've been doing the same sort of stuff for 20 years. And, you know, I was getting pretty much patted on the back and encouraged and re-signed. And, you know, re-signed with raises. I had just signed a long-term contract with them. And everything was great. And, you know, it's the type of humor we engaged in was similar to the Trump-Rosie exchange. Animals, fat slob, pig, Como
the Creep. You guys had a few names for me, over the years. So.
Okay, so sure.
I deserved it. Look, I'm a purpose for you.
Alan marrying a Filipino bride for her green, so she could get a green card,
that?
You know? I mean, no, of course. I mean, that's just, you know, we characterize him as looking like somebody who survived a partial birth abortion or, you know, stuff like that. I mean, it was just, but I'm saying that is
was it right for him to apologize?
Of course. No, there was legitimate anger, and it was absolutely who knew? I didn't know anything about it. The Cinderella team. The girls, you know, when they found out about it, when somebody wanted to use it to further their own career, or because maybe Barack Obama was getting too much press or something, when somebody jumped in to do that to get his face, then but. Yeah, then that's when it started to take off in a mob frenzy in that direction.
You never
saw that. The apology, absolutely. Anger was legitimate. The apology was appropriate, and that was fine. You know,
you never spoke publicly about this in any way.
No, I didn't. No.
Do you think you should have apologized to the girls if you had an opportunity? You have an opportunity.
I would
now.
Have. Sure. I mean,
Do you want to say anything to them?
I apologize. I have a daughter who's an 11-year-old girl. She plays on a basketball team, and if anybody characterized her directly as the H word, you know, I would, you know, I'd kick their teeth in. You know, if I saw it, you know, happen in real time, you know, but. We dwelt in a world of, you know, comedy, ridicule, and it, at the time it was just an abstract group of women. Of course, in retrospect, that wasn't the case, but you know, and again, so the apologies, all of that legitimate, necessary. But again, then afterward, it took on a mob frenzy, a media frenzy. And you had Al Sharpton, who, you know, was the kind of guy who'd park in a handicapped spot, or, you know, this guy all of a sudden is leading the charge. This guy who'd bring a wheelchair to an amusement park so he could jump the lines, because it's all about him. And he you know.
Well, let me ask you about that, because we were just in the background, we're showing some of Al Sharpton here. When Imus, in your view, when he went on his radio show, and I confronted him, I recently had a debate with Al Sharpton, and really seemed to be begging for forgiveness. And he said it not once, but twice on his radio show, said, "It was wrong that I did that. I'm sorry. It was hurtful. And I want an opportunity to make this right." And Sharpton wouldn't accept the apology.
Right. Well, Sharpton, first of all, I'm not here to talk about Mr. Imus. He did his thing. He held his head high. And, you can't say enough about, the class that he exhibited alongside the girls of the team. But Sharpton, of course, the classless clown that he is, just used the situation, in my humble opinion, to further his own goals, to further himself. And I don't know, the media treated him like he was Nelson Mandela, for God's sakes, without asking him about his past inflammatory comments. Right. This sanctimonious skunk. I mean, he said some horrible things, which you've confronted him on. You did so last Friday, but nobody else did. They treated him again like he was somebody.
Reverend, in the case of Don Imus, I think you missed an opportunity. And let me say for the record, I don't like Don Imus. I like Curtis and Kubi. I don't listen to Don Imus. I think what he said was deplorable. I think it was despicable. I think it was racist, Reverend. But he got down on his knees. And let me finish. He got down on his knees, and you're a reverend and a Christian, and he asked you for forgiveness. Now, this is why I think the reverend ought to have given it to him. Because of your past.
You and Slee would say a lot of things I don't agree with. But if you don't stand on the radio and say it, I have nothing to do with it. We're talking about the use of advertising. And nothing you claim I said, and most of that I did, had nothing to do with the use of airwaves and advertisers.
That was a clip from last week's debate between the Reverend Al Sharpton and myself during his National Action Network conference. We continue now with Don Imus' longtime producer, Bernard McGuirk. You know, he said a lot of outrageous things.
He did.
He talked about diamond merchants, white interlopers, white men were in caves when we were building pyramids, Greek homos, all of these things. His career is gone. And he ran for president.
The white interloper episode with Freddie's Market actually led to people's deaths.
Well, in that particular case, does it now, in retrospect, and this was during a slow news period, this was the news, in retrospect, do you feel angry? This is a double standard. In terms of, and especially the fact that it was the Reverend Al Sharpton leading the way here.
Absolutely. As I said before, I feel strongly about that, that it's a double standard. I mean, nobody ever got them out. These are pop culture terms that I employed that caused me to be dismissed from this company that they caved to this guy with that record. They acted like sort of like the Neville Chamberlains of broadcasting. I mean, they appeased really this terrorist here, and it's just, you know, they're almost like free speech surrender monkeys, to borrow a New York Post.
Let me ask you this: you were fired. Tell us the story about this. And interesting, you had recently just signed a 5-year contract. You'd used the term "hoes" how many times in the past? And
I've used it, as I said before. We've used it. It's just we've used it. We've appropriated it from the popular culture. I mean, it's morning radio. We're up against, you know, Howard Stern. It's not Garrison Keillor on NPR. Yes, we've used it in the past. I've used it as Cardinal Egan, put on the hat and do the bit. Be Jesus. My wild, to the tune of My Wild Irish Rose, My Wild Irish
you
Rose.
You want to put the cap on with
go on ahead now.
The Federal Express box.
But it's true. It was all applause. Name of the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost. The Iron Man in the Pine Box. We want the most, be Jesus. You know, and it was all great stuff. And it was okay when they were making fun of the Catholic priest altar boy scandal. You know, all that was
but
good.
But we've been saying this for all these years. And now you get fired after signing a new contract. How were you told, and what are your plans now, and will you sue CBS?
Well, I can't speak about that. I mean, I was let go pretty unceremoniously. Received a FedEx package and a terse one-page note with no explanation. But, as far as the plans, that's all to be seen, Sean. That's all to
all right,
be seen.
Let me ask you this:
don't forget the milieu that we dwelt in, the morning radio world. I mean, we're very self-deprecating. It was rough.
Well, and in his case, when he added the words "nappy-headed," then in that sense, all right. But he did apologize. You see, look, I will say this: in my humble opinion, he seemed very sincere, very contrite.
Of course he was, of course.
He seemed like he wanted to make it right. He was fired from both jobs when he went to meet with the Rutgers women's basketball team.
Absolutely.
They accepted his apology.
Sure.
And I think if, considering they were the ones that were the target of the comment, that should have been the end of it.
At that point, it was, my humble view, it was all about Al Sharpton. I mean, it got to that stage where they pretty much acquiesced and surrendered and appeased Al Sharpton.
Speaking of Sharpton, I want to ask you this. Yeah, look, I don't want Al Sharpton on the left or Jesse Jackson on the left or on the right. I wouldn't want Falwell or Robertson or those guys. I want anybody deciding who says what. And as you say, the game keeps getting changed. How do we know what word is acceptable and what word isn't acceptable? It's a gray area that changes on a daily basis. You referred, though, to Sharpton as a terrorist.
Well, I'm just saying, I think he terrorized. It seemed like I viewed it from the media perspective, from watching on TV and reading the paper, as you guys did. It seemed like he terrorized some broadcast executives that they were, in a fetal position under their desk, sucking their thumbs on their Blackberries, trying to coordinate their response to him. And, it just seemed that way. I mean, I don't know exactly what went on, but it just seems that way.
Would this have happened if Joel Hollander were still at CBS? Would it have happened if there was not a power vacuum because they were between managers, it seemed? And what do you think?
I don't know. I don't know. But, I mean, I really have no way of knowing. That could be. But clearly, you wouldn't want to be in a foxhole with some of these, whoever made these decisions. And I don't know who it was.
You know, I keep hoping, and I mentioned this to you during the break, that some or a couple of executives might say, you know what, we overreacted. It was the moment. We got impassioned. We really should reconsider this. And let's bring these guys back, and let's all have this dialogue. Because with Don Imus and you at the center of this dialogue about race, that's a much more powerful way to address all this, all this happened here.
I think what happened ended up being very divisive. It wasn't helpful in furthering any sort of harmony. I think that there are a lot of people that are angry out there, and I think it was counterproductive the way it was handled. And so I agree with you 100%, yeah. Obviously.
And now you've got JV and Elvis, also CBS properties, who are suspended because of a bit that they did.
Right.
I wonder if you're closely following that and if you have strong feelings about what should happen in that situation.
Well, no, I mean, it's like the old, the oft-quoted anti-Nazi German pastor who said, first they came for the communists, but I wasn't a communist, so I didn't say anything. Then they came for the Jews, but I'm not a Jew, I didn't say anything. Then they came for the Catholics, but I'm a Protestant. Then when they came for me, there was nobody to speak.
Niemöller, well, that was the guy.
Niemöller, right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. It seems to be a slippery slope. And by the way, I'm proud of the work that the show did, that Mr. Imus did for his ranch and for advocating a wounded veterans' causes and increasing the benefits for them.
See, they didn't look at the totality of who he is and what he's done.
And charity work, he was in the middle of a telethon for his ranch for kids with cancer and sudden infant death syndrome and all that stuff. The totality and the context.
Have you talked to Imus about this? Have you, the two of you, discussed this?
That's between me and I'm here to discuss myself, to be honest with you, Alan. So, you can't.
Let me ask you this. I want to just examine the use of this word ho, which, recently now we've had a debate over rap music.
That's correct.
In the culture. And, bitches and hoes and the N-word, et cetera, et cetera. I confronted Al Sharpton. He called the former African-American mayor of New York the N-word and a whore. And his career went on.
Sure.
And he ran for president.
And he got treated like royalty on these various...
Every presidential candidate is now begging for his endorsement.
That's right, including Hillary Clinton, who took $800,000 from Timbaland.
3 weeks ago.
Whose music is sprinkled with ho, B-word, the N-word, all kinds of degrading... Yeah. So what are we talking about here?
Well, then that raises the question, are we now at the point, has the bar changed so much that there is no room for any ethnic jokes? There's a rule. Explain how the rules have changed, considering you just signed a contract and you had said this for years.
Exactly. Well, I would like to know. Again, I never got the memo when the H word was elevated or lowered to the level of the N word. But I think it's a horrible thing for this country where people can't... poke fun at each other, and just joke around and, have a good time without fear of being, hammered by the PC police or lose your livelihood over it.
But you used a lot of examples, the things you guys said to each other on a daily basis. Let me give you an example. Like, I listen to Rosie O'Donnell, and I want Rosie to have free speech. I didn't like what she said, her conspiracy theories about 9/11. I didn't like when she said radical Christianity. I'm a Christian is the same as radical Islam in this country. She seems to get a pass, too. On all that, she made fun of Asian Americans.
Yeah.
She still kept a job at ABC.
Right.
And why is it that we're sort of selective moral outrage? No outrage about Sharpton. No, not that much outrage, really, about Rosie. She doesn't get fired.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to know the answer to that myself. I mean, apparently, the media is going to... indulge a guy like Shaw. They wait for him to pick up his, dust off his bullhorn and come out, and then they cower, I guess. I mean, I don't think she should have been fired.
Me neither. I don't think anybody should have been fired.
They're going to let her contract elapse, and then, take it from there. But to fire somebody.
Let me ask you this. You had a lot of newsmakers on your show on a regular basis, the
sure.
Tim Russerts of the world,
yeah.
Joe Biden's of the world, the Chris Dodds of the world, a lot of politicians, John Kerry. Very few seem to support you, but yet they were aware of the humor that was involved in the program. Are you mad at any of these folks?
No, I'm not. I don't want to get into that, and a lot of them did support us afterward.
A lot of them didn't.
Well, I can name a bunch right now. McCain, Giuliani, Lieberman.
They all did. Kerry.
Right, Kerry. So a lot of them did, but am I mad at them? I don't harbor any animosity. I mean, I'm just I'm just a guy out there with a family who just all of a sudden was just shaken up.
I want to go back to your background. You grew up in
I grew up in the projects
in the South
Bronx,
in the South Bronx,
the James Monroe houses in the boogie down South Bronx, as we say.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words, strong language, let me put it that way, was not new to you in your life.
And not at all.
I've spent a lot of time with you tonight. You know, this to you, what you kept saying to me over and over again was, we wanted to bash everybody. And by the way, an Imus would shoot at me, not that I care, you know, or Alan or any of us.
We bashed everybody and anybody, including ourselves, including the network we worked on.
Used to get made fun of a lot.
MSNBC, their slogan should have been, "We report, you decide not to watch." The biggest thing on MSNBC was Rita Cosby's butt. I mean, we did stuff. I'm giving you an idea.
We have to ask you to leave now.
That's the kind of, there's many, many, many other examples. Yeah. I mean, we've made fun
of
Southerners.
He would make fun of his own background.
Southerners, right, exactly.
Make fun of himself.
He's from Oklahoma. He's from...
Daytona 500 was the Inbreeders Cup, you know. Yeah. I mean, you know, but everybody
laughs. You make fun of him, as you point out.
Yeah. People laugh at that stuff.
Right. Here's what concerns me.
PC police are here, and they shut it down a lot. You know, I mean, people need laughter.
First of all, I hope you reunite with Imus someplace where you can all have another home and a platform to continue doing what you were doing, and then have this dialogue. But here's what concerns me. Even if you had continued on CBS and MSNBC, would there have been such a monkey on your back in that you would be worried about, what do I say? Can I do this? Can I do that? Would it have automatically been a much tamer show because of what you had gone through?
Well, you're a hypothetical. I'm sure we would have been more, more judicious in our use of street slang, no question about it. But, I guess perhaps it would have paid. Of course we would. I mean, whatever the conventional rule is, we would follow it, of course. I mean, nobody uses the N-word. You just don't do that. But bees and hoes, I mean, that's just, we're just trying to keep, what am I going to say, dames?
1940s,
those are some tough dames, man. What am I supposed to do?
Guys and dolls.
I mean, we're competing in the marketplace. I mean, and everybody got it. The Dixie Chicks, they were the Dixie Pigs, Madonna was a two-legged yeast infection. I mean, being with Madonna was like putting down one of Shaquille O'Neal's.
The day's going to come.
It was rough.
You're going to work again. Imus, we hope, works again. We hope he comes back. I hope he does.
Absolutely.
Would you not say those kinds of things next time you're in such a venue?
You mean call Rosie O'Donnell Rosie O'Donuts and things like that?
Or
we used to say about Imus when he brought his wife to work, take your daughter to work day? But would we say, would we say, you're asking me what
would you do this, that kind of material again?
I would do anything that wasn't over the line. I wouldn't.
How do you know where the line is? That's the issue.
Well, I would monitor it closely, and I would just seek the counsel of the powers that be.
Cardinal O'Connor.
And then
Cardinal Egan.
That's the thing. The Irish people, we savaged them. How do you pick out an Irishman in a hospital ward? Just look for the guy blowing the suds off the bedpan and stuff like that. I mean, people laugh at that stuff, though. I mean, they don't go out and, look to try to get you fired. I mean, those things have been said, is what I mean, as an example. And that, in that realm, in that context, some other things were said. And occasionally, obviously, we went over the line, apparently. So, who knows? Who knows?
What do you want to have happen now? What is your hope
that memo
that happens now? What do you want to see happen?
What is my hope?
Yes.
Get back to work.
Well, I hope that Al Sharpton's blow dryer falls in the what do I hope? I hope everything.
I think you learned. You just monitored yourself.
I hope we all.
See, you stopped yourself.
We go back to where everybody can relax and everybody can have fun and we can poke fun at each other and not take it too seriously. Everybody's got to lighten up and that the people in the radio community and the broadcast community don't take this sitting down, this, because it is a slippery slope. It can happen to you. So stand up for what's right.
Absolutely. I hope you get back to work soon.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for being with us. Appreciate you.
Pleasure so much.
Bernard McGurk, the former producer of the Imus in the Morning Show, is producer for the last 20 years, up until the words nappy-headed ho got them both involuntarily leisured, as he appeared earlier this week on the Hannity and Combs show. And you got to hear Hannity and Combs and McGurk mix it up together. Good little interview. And that closes out this week's edition, the Easter egg portion, the bonus portion of the A Little Bit of Everything Radio Extravaganza, is only heard at johnlightning.com. That's johnlightning.com. Sports.com, where this show will appear archived tomorrow, streaming in archive form, and of course, available for you to download onto your iPod or whatever, so you can enjoy it again and again, or hear any portion of it that you might have missed earlier this evening. That wraps it up again for this week. Until next week, take good care, you all. Good night.
Original Radio New York International.